From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 18th day of November 2023. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason in Washington, D.C. this week with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting for Washington Watch. Today is our USDA special. We'll talk with Lance Honig. He's the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. We'll discuss NASS and its surveys, how they're taken, and why it's important for farmers, producers, and landowners to fill them out, and then we'll hear about one of those reports. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. We'll get an update from the statisticians in Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, I'm traveling this week with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. We're at Washington Watch, and it's an event that takes place every year in D.C. Lance Honig has walked over from USDA to where we are and is joining me now to talk a little bit about USDA NASS numbers. He is the chief of the crops branch. Thank you, Lance, for taking some time with me today. I want to talk a little bit about the importance of USDA reporting, not the reporting that you and your crew do that comes out with USDA reports that we hear on the radio here, also with the weekly crop progress numbers, but the reporting that producers, landowners, and others do back to the United States Department of Agriculture, and the importance of getting good, valuable information. It's been in a tough time for the last decade or so, I think. Farmers have started to trust less, report less. How much of an issue has this been for USDA NASS to this point?
Well, first off, thanks for inviting me over here. Really appreciate it. It's always a great opportunity to interact with some folks here. And you know, you really hit the nail on the head, right? Reporting is key. Reporting is a bit on the downturn as of late. And no, I don't want to focus on the importance of the reports, but I do want to at least reiterate that the reason that even reporting by farmers is important, because the information coming back out is so critical. And so since it is that critical, it's got to be accurate. It's got to be as accurate as possible to be as useful as possible. And reporting by farmers is still a critical component of the work that we do here at NASS. We do look at other sources of data. We continue to explore additional sources, but based on all the research that we've done still, based on all the analysis that we've done, the survey data that we collect is still the most valuable, the most accurate information that we can get for especially things like stocks and yield, harvested acres, all these key components in establishing not only production levels, but inventory levels of the stocks. And so that information is still the most important source of data that we have. And so for it to be accurate, the reporting by the farmers has to be accurate, because that's where it's coming from. And so when we see a little bit of a downturn in that reporting, it has an impact on the quality. It just does. And certainly we adjust our procedures, we adjust our sampling, we adjust everything that we can to account for that. But I can't sit here and tell you that less data isn't a little bit worse than having more data. And so there's a lot of reasons why that happens. Some of it can be a trust factor. I get that. There's a lot of things going on in the world today that make folks trust a little bit less, whether it's the government or anybody else, quite frankly, right? Trust is an issue these days. But burden's an issue too. And so we are not the only folks out there asking farmers for information. I certainly recognize that. As often as we're making calls, reaching out to farmers, sometimes at really busy periods, we're probably not the only call they're getting either. And so there's a lot of factors, I think, that are influencing why we see a little bit of a downturn in the response from producers.
I'd like to lay some groundwork. First, are you a political appointee?
I am not. And not only am I not a political appointee, there is not one person working for NASS who's a political appointee, including our administrator. So there are zero political appointees within NAS. As a statistical agency, that's critical, right? Because if you want these data to be truly unbiased, uninfluenced, then the best way to do that is to make sure that you keep that separation from the political process. And that's exactly what we do.
How many administrations have you served under?
Oh, boy, I don't even know for sure, but I've been around for more than 30 years, and so it turns over fairly frequently, as you know. So I've seen many changes at the top, but our procedures stay the same. It doesn't matter, right, in terms of the numbers that we produce. It's just a different person coming across the street to sign the report for us, because they do still sign the report, but they're not signing it to say this is what we think the numbers should be. They're not even saying they agree with the numbers. They're literally just acknowledging that this is an official USDA report.
A different political appointee, generally speaking, somebody, Secretary of Ag, or somebody who's standing in for them, but they have no influence on the numbers because they've already been set in stone, and they're just signing off.
That's right, and in fact, the way we're doing things today with live streaming those briefings that we do, the secretary or his or her designate, depending on who's in that seat at the time, actually come into the lockup space just moments after the report has been released. And so there's not even an opportunity for them to influence the numbers, even if they wanted to, which no one has ever tried to.
You mentioned a couple of reports I was thinking I wanted to go through very quickly. I wasn't thinking about the prospective plantings report. I was going to dismiss that, but I'll come back to it. But let's start with the grain stocks report. We just brought both of those numbers out at the end of March. There are two parts to that grain stocks report. One of them is, I think, almost a census of what is in terms of off-farm storage. I want you to tell me about that, and then we'll talk about the on-farm storage as well.
Sure. And so for that off-farm component of the stocks report, we go to the source that's storing it off the farm, right? Those commercial facilities. And we do treat that as essentially a census. Our target sample there is virtually every operation across the country. Now, obviously, a lot of these are consolidated, right? And so we don't have to make contacts at every elevator. We can go to the headquarters units and collect that data. But that's where we get the information for the off-farm component. Not only is it a virtual census, but that's where we actually see some of our highest reporting and responses that we see. You're talking about a lot more business-oriented folks here, and so they're easier to find, right? They're going to be sitting in an office environment. We can catch them. We can find them. And so we're getting really high response there. We're getting good cooperation. And quite frankly, very accurate reporting, because they're going directly into their systems of record and pulling that data out for us.
Is that number different than the monthly reporting that the grain elevators do to you?
So the grain elevators don't report to NAS monthly. That would go to a different part of the government. So at NAS, we do it quarterly. So when you see these grain stocks reports come out in March, June, September, and then, of course, January, representing the December 1 stocks, that's based on the reporting that these facilities are doing directly to NAS.
So the grain stocks, again, those are the numbers of bushels of, for instance, corn or soybeans, wheat, that are actually on hand, still able to be used, and have not yet been consumed in the nation. You have a census, very accurate, as you told us, for the off-farm storage, that which is places like a grain elevator, terminals, other places. On-farm storage is the feed and residual number. That's the one we always talk, well, it's not actually the feed and residual number, but that's the one we talk about on the air with the brokers, kind of like it's a feed and residual number, but that it has some flex in it. How do you go about collecting that information?
So if you want to collect information about what's stored on the farms, obviously you go to the farmers. And so we have the quarterly surveys that we do. So it's kind of a combined effort, right? You know, you mentioned prospective planning, so I'm sure we'll get to that. But essentially, we're using the same survey to collect the quantity stored on the farm as we do to collect the acres or production, depending on the time of year it is. So in March, when, you know, what we're really targeting from an acreage perspective is planting intentions, we're using that same survey, that same sample of producers, the same form, to collect not only their planting intentions, but we're also collecting their grains and oil seeds that are stored on the farm at the beginning of the month. And so that's, again, where we come back to response rate. And so the higher response that we can get from the farmers, the more accurate that reporting is going to be. That's just a basic fact.
So, for instance, What was your response rate, if you can tell me, like, for the prospective plantings report from producers this time around? And how many producers do you actually try to survey?
So a typical sample size for these quarterly surveys that we do is somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 to 75,000. That's who we target. The response will kind of vary throughout the year, obviously, and certainly vary across the country. But back in March when we did our survey, then our response rate, I don't remember exactly, but came in just under 50%.
That seems like a really good response rate for those who are used to having marketing information. And if you get this stuff in your mail, in the mailbox, a 3 to 5% response rate is really good. A 50% response rate is simply unheard of.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And that's something I like to remind folks of, too, is that, you know, we're not talking about bad response rates. We're just talking about they're not as high as maybe they used to be. And as I said, they're not bad, but higher is always better, right? And that's what we want, is we always want the data to be as accurate as possible. And so the best thing we can do to make it more accurate is to get more response.
What have you done over the past decade to see what you can do about that? Is there a way to respond on your computer, on the phone, mail, different kinds of ways to get back to the United States Department of Agriculture?
Yeah, probably the biggest push that we've made in the last few years is really improving, enhancing, and expanding our option for online reporting. Early on, it was kind of a cumbersome process. It's still not perfect, right? We're still working on it. At this point, we've gotten at least the online experience greatly improved. It's much smoother. We're passing information back to the producer that they've reported before to make it a little bit easier for them to verify things, check things. And some of the future enhancements we're still working on is making it a little bit easier to get into, right? There's still a fairly good-sized survey key that you need to key in. And that, you know, obviously we want to make that as easy as possible, but we have to balance that with making sure that the information you're reporting is secure. And so we also need to make sure that you're reporting for you. And so it's a delicate balance in there, right? Making it as easy as possible, but we're never going to sacrifice the confidentiality. We're never going to sacrifice the security. And so we're working through how to make that all blend and make the experience even better moving forward.
And finally, can you talk a little bit about the difference between the reports that come out, sometimes monthly, actually a lot of them monthly, but that we think of as crop reports? Monthly, we talk about the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. That's produced by a different agency. Starting in August, we'll talk about crop production reports. Those don't come out, well, for corn and soybeans every month of the year. Can you tell me how those two are used together?
Yeah, so obviously we're one big USDA, right? And so every report that comes out of USDA oftentimes is thought of as coming from exactly the same place. And that's not exactly true. And so the WASDE report, as you mentioned, that's actually coordinated by a group called the World Agricultural Outlook Board. They literally report directly to the Office of the Chief Economist. And so that's in contrast to the reports that come out from NAS, like the monthly crop production report. NAS being, again, a statistical agency falling under the Department of Agriculture as well. But most of the probably the biggest difference that you're going to see there is, as I've talked a lot about surveys, all the information that NAS publishes in our various reports throughout the year, they're all based on some type of direct data source, either survey-based, maybe some administrative data from other USDA agencies, things of that nature. But oftentimes what you'll see in the WASDE report, some of these forecasts that they make before NAS enters into that space for the season is going to involve things like weather, trend analysis, and things of that nature. So there's some fundamental differences behind those numbers and the differences between them based on who's responsible for them at the time. Now, I would point out that, like you kind of mentioned with corn and soybeans, when NAS first issues a yield and production forecast in August, from that point forward, the WASDE report will adopt those NAS numbers for the U.S. in that report. But until NAS starts, it's a completely different methodology that's being used in putting those numbers together.
Yeah, so the May figures that will come out, that'll be the first time we see some new crop numbers officially from the United States Department of Agriculture in the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, or a S&D table, will be from the World Ag Outlook Board, and they will, for instance, say, hey, the weather's been fantastic. That gives us a trend that is maybe slightly better than average, or it's been awful and the Northwest hasn't been in at all and it's been long enough, it's late enough, we might adjust there. That is a estimate of forecast that is a prediction by the World Ag Outlook Board. But once we get to August, those numbers that are developed from USDA and NAS, that's statistically developed numbers, the counts that you have made, will just simply put into those reports. Anything else that we need to talk about as it's related to USDA NAS?
Yeah, I think, again, just, you know, reiterating the point that the better the information coming in, the better the information is going to be going out. And so we're here to work with producers. You know, I mentioned we're enhancing our online reporting. We're always providing as many opportunities to make that as easy for producers as we can. You know, we're going to mail you a form. We're going to give you the chance to mail it back, fill it out online. If that doesn't work out, we're going to give you a call, and in some cases, we'll actually have an enumerator visit your farm. If that's what makes it easiest for you, we want to meet you halfway, because this is a team effort, right? We're in this together. We want the data to be as accurate as possible because we want to serve all of the ag industry, in particular the farmers, and the best way to do that is with the best numbers, and the best way to get the best numbers is to get involvement from both sides.
Thank you very much, Lance.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
Lance Honig is the chief of the crops branch at USDA NAS. We're here in Washington, D.C. with the NAFB at Washington Watch. Now let's take a look at a different kind of report from USDA NAS. Lance Honig just told us about the surveys that they took, the data they collect, which is hard data collected from farmers and producers, sometimes survey data. This set of data is not that kind of data for the Weekly Crop Progress Report. It is objective data, or data which is collected by those folks on the ground that take a look across the landscape and make some judgments about what's been planted this week, what emergence is like, how much in the way of percentage may be up, those sorts of things. This is the Weekly Crop Progress Report, and this week it shows around the nation that about 8% of the corn crop has been put into the ground. That's the 18 primary states. The rolling five-year average is 5%. 4% of the soybeans this week have been planted. 1% by comparison to the five-year average. The wheat headed is now 10% across the nation. 8% is the five-year average. And the condition of the crop is said to be 34% fair, 24% good, and 3% excellent. Those 24 and 3 were the same as last week. However, the fair condition dropped 2 percentage points this week from last week. Now, here are the statisticians from Minnesota, Illinois, and Iowa with updates from their regions.
This is Brian Gallagher, agricultural statistician for the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office. Strong winds and warmer than normal temperatures led to drier soil conditions, which allowed 5.2 days suitable for fieldwork during the week ending April 16, 2023. There were a few isolated areas in the southern part of Iowa that saw more precipitation than average for this time of year. Fertilizer applications continued, and oat seeding accelerated. Farmers began planting corn and soybeans, although many operators were waiting for precipitation to improve soil moisture supplies. Topsoil moisture condition rated 7% very short, 23% short, 66% adequate, and 4% surplus. 7% of Iowa's expected corn crop has been planted, almost 2 weeks ahead of last year and 6 days ahead of the five-year average. Over one-third of the state's expected oat crop was planted to reach 51%, 10 days ahead of last year and 6 days ahead of normal. 4% of the oat crop has emerged. Pastures continue to break dormancy and become green. Overall, livestock conditions continue to be good. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Brian Gallagher.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Much of last week stayed dry and was very well suited to field work across Illinois. Temperatures averaged 62.7 degrees, and that was 11.5 degrees above normal. Rainfall averaged 0.65 inches across the state, and that was nearly 1/2 inch below normal for this time of year. There was an average of 5.9 days suitable for fieldwork around the Prairie State, and topsoil moisture was rated 1% very short, 11 short, 63 adequate, and 25% surplus. On Sunday, soil temperatures ranged from the low to mid-50s in northern Illinois to the upper 50s in southern areas. Corn planting reached 10% finished by Sunday. That is 9 points ahead of 1 week earlier and 7 points ahead of the 5-year average. Soybean planting reached 4% finished compared to 1% normally. 3% of winter wheat acres are now heading in Illinois compared to 4% 1 year ago and 3% normally. The condition of the wheat crop was rated 1% poor, 22% fair, 56% good, and 21% excellent. That is better than 1 week ago and considerably better than 1 year ago. Pasture conditions were rated 1% poor, 23% fair, 54% good, and 22% excellent. That is better than 1 week ago. I would like to thank all the people that responded to the crop progress and condition report this week. We really appreciate your assistance in telling the story of Illinois agriculture. And one more thing, I would like to thank all the farmers and ranchers that have already responded to the Census of Agriculture. We really appreciate it. And there is still time to respond if you have not done so already. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office with the weekly crop progress and condition report for the week ending April 16, 2023. Minnesota had 1 day suitable for field work during the week. Although some counties received a few inches of snow, most had melted with resulting widespread flooding and standing water in fields reported. There was little field work accomplished save for a few producers planting oats and spreading manure. Livestock were doing well. Topsoil moisture supply is rated 3% very short, 7% short, 63% adequate, and 27% surplus. Oats planted was reported at 3%, behind the 5-year average of 7% for this time of year, and slightly ahead of last year's 1%. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the nation. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, coming to you this week from Washington, D.C. at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's Washington Watch event. You can always find more from us online at willag.org, willag.org. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.